This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. Times in every man's life when he lifts his eyes and his heart to the distant horizon. At rare moments, he may even glimpse the eternal, but more often, he'll dream of enchanted journeys. We're all of us wanderers and travelers on the face of the earth, and if some of us never have the golden opportunity of visiting far Cathay and old Baghdad, the secret mountains of Tibet, or the courts of the ancient rulers of China, still we can close our eyes and dream. Our favorite story for this week is about the most wondrous journey in all history, the travels of Marco Polo. It was chosen by the great actress Miss Eva Le Gallienne. We're going to travel back in time now, half a dozen centuries, for the story of Marco Polo. This is Venice, in the year of the Eighth Crusade. The richest, most handsome city on the continent of Europe. The sailing ships of Venice ply the great sea from Spain to Suez, bringing home to these shops along the Piazza San Marco the treasures of the medieval world. Here you can buy rubies and silks and spices, chessmen from Persia, sandalwood from Timor, cloves and nutmegs from the steppes of Afghanistan. Many Venetians have made fortunes through serving the world with the fruits of their commerce. The pink marble house there by the Bridge of Sighs, that is the palace of the Polos. Merchants of extraordinary courage, the Polo brothers. 9 years ago, they left this palace on a trading journey to the east. 9 years ago, they set out on foot into the untracked wastelands of Central Asia and vanished.
Unlock the gate. Let us in.
What do you want?
We're tired.
We want some food and rest.
Then go to an inn. This is not an inn. This is the mansion of the Polos.
Don't you think we know that woman?
Be gone, vagabond.
What?
Patience, Matthew. She must be a new servant.
Well, she'll never be an old one in this household. Let us in.
Not without the master's permission.
You're talking with the masters of the house.
Dressed in such rags and tatters, the masters of the house.
We've been on a long journey, woman.
I am Niccolo Polo. This is my brother, Mafio.
Give us entrance, woman, and quickly.
What is this commotion, signora?
Only some beggars pretending to be your father and uncle.
Those men below?
Marco.
How do you know my name?
Marco Polo, my own son. Do you not recognize your father?
I cannot believe we are in Venice. Home again.
You do remember me, don't you, son?
I remember you with black hair, not gray. And I can remember you picking me up and holding me in your arms.
That would be a difficult thing for him to do now.
I remember Uncle Mafio's laugh. And the stories he used to tell me, Father, of faraway places.
We have more to tell you now, Marco. Of the farthest away places man has ever been.
Marco, you've not mentioned your mother. Is she not here?
No, Father.
Away from Venice, taking the summer in the country? Yes?
The plague took her, sir. The third year you were gone.
Oh. Oh, my poor Elisabetta. In how many distant deserts did I dream of her in my arms? Now I come home to find that she has traveled farther than I.
God rest her soul.
Tell me of some of the places you visited, Father. Did you get as far as Constantinople?
Eh? Oh, that is but the doormat of our travels, Marco.
And we brought back to Venice some of the greatest treasures of the East.
Look, Marco, how much do you think this is worth?
This bit of black bark? Well, nothing.
Oh, that is the greatest treasure of all, my son. It is money made from paper.
Paper money? What is paper worth?
This could ransom a royal prince anywhere in Eastern Asia.
Well, what makes the paper so valuable?
This seal, Marco. The seal of the most powerful, most dreaded, most enlightened ruler on the face of the earth. Master of 1,000,000,000 souls from the Gobi Desert to the rim of Poland. His Imperial Majesty, the Emperor of Cathay, Kublai Khan.
No, Messer Polo, you cannot take him away. Poor motherless boy.
Oh, Marco is not a boy. He is a man, Signora.
Why must you go on these endless travels? Why can you not be content in Venice like an ordinary citizen?
Why, Signora? There is nothing to keep me here. The love I prayed to find waiting for me has gone. And there is a restlessness in me that drives me against the unknown. And this restlessness is good, Signora. It makes us taller men.
As you wish, Nicola.
You wanted to talk with me, Father?
Yes, Marco. Sit down. I am going away again with your Uncle Matthew.
To Cathay?
When we left Xanadu, where the great Khan holds his summer court, he asked us to return. He wants us to teach him about Christianity and the ways of the Western world.
May I go with you, Father?
It is a terrible journey, my son. It is impossible to imagine the hardship unless one has actually gone through it.
I'm strong. I can withstand hardship.
You're not afraid?
I'm a merchant of Venice, sir. The son of my father.
I am proud of you, Marco. Prepare your belongings and say goodbye to your friends. We will leave when the moon is new.
Thank you, Father.
And keep a journal of your travels, my son, day by day. For the young men of some future century may want to hear your words about the farthest journey ever undertaken by tradesmen of the Western world.
First day. Thus I begin the journal of our travels. My father, my uncle, and I set out by ship from Venice. Our destination, the seaport of Accra, in the land of Palestine. Twenty-second day. We arrive in the Holy Land and seek audience with His Holiness Pope Gregory, who gives us his blessing on our journey and a letter of greeting to the great Khan. One 190th day. Traveling on foot, we arrive in the ruins of Babylon and pitch our tents in what was once the Garden of Eden. And 20th day. We are resting in the cool, fragrant vineyards of Balkh, which is within the dominions of the great Khan. We are learning the language of the Mongol people and preparing for the ascent of the heights of Pamir. Seven 101st day. We have seen miracles this day from the mountains which are truly the rooftops of the world. The air will scarcely fill out a man's lungs, and fires have no warmth. This is the country called Tibet, and the people are strange and unfriendly. One 1,003rd day. We are crossing down into the dreaded desert of Lop Nor, where it has never rained. My father warns me of the danger from the heat and sun. Drives the sense from a man's head and makes him hear voices luring him off the trail to die in the sand drifts. The heat is unbearable. The clouds of dust stick in one's throat. Sometimes I feel my mind will leave my body, and I fancy that I hear voices. A voice. A woman's voice. Calling to me. No. It is a one of the witch boys. Calling me to my death. No. I must not answer. No, no.
Marco Polo.
I must not answer. There is great danger.
There is no danger, Marco. Do you see danger in my face?
No. No, there is nothing but beauty in your face. Where am I? What is this place?
This is the house of my brother, Wang Chu, near the city of Kanbalu. My name is Bang Cha.
Where is my father, Bang Cha? And my uncle?
They are both well. You grew sick, Marco, out on the desert of Lop Nur. But your father and uncle brought you safely to a camp of soldiers, commanded by my brother. And he brought you here, where I have taken care of you.
How long have I been sick, Bang Cha? A day? 2 days?
3 moons have been born and died while you have tossed with fever on this day.
And you have nursed me. Thank you, Bang Cha.
Well, Bang Cha, your patience seems to be improving.
Come in, Messer Marco and Messer Nicola.
Marco, how are you feeling?
Much better, Father. I shall be able to travel again soon.
Oh, there are no more travels, Marco. We have arrived. This is the city of the great Khan, Kanbalu.
And why should the great Khan wish to see you?
Why, we have traveled all the way from Venice to see him.
The great Khan is our friend. You cannot refuse us.
I can refuse you. As Prime Minister of Cathay, my voice is the voice of the great Khan himself. I speak his wishes.
I swear to you, from what my father and uncle have told me, the great Khan, he will wish to see us after our long journey.
You are proud, young sir. Perhaps a visit with the Emperor will teach you humility. Very well. His Majesty will see you. But bear in mind, Venetians, you do this at your own risk.
And why do you say that, sir?
It has been 9 winters since you called at the court of the Emperor. Changes have taken place. He may not be so eager to see foreigners.
We will take that chance.
The decision is yours. Prepare yourselves, Venetians, to meet the most powerful ruler on the face of the earth.
We're ready now for Act Two of Evela Galleon's favorite story, with Roland Morris as Marco Polo. In Xanadu did Kublai Khan a stately pleasure dome decree, where Alph, the sacred river, ran through caverns measureless to man, down to a sunless sea. Into the court of the great Kublai Khan, the Venetians were ushered. The throne room had more majesty and richness than any chamber Marco had ever seen. And on a raised platform at the far end of the throne room sat a man of 60 years, perhaps, with a scraggly gray beard and wrinkled face. He was dressed in robes of chamois skin, intertwined with thread of pure silver. His slanting bead-like eyes watched the polos as they prostrated themselves, foreheads to the earth, before the Emperor of all Asia.
Bow down, ye mortals, before the ruling prince of the earth, the king of kings and khan of khans and emperor of emperors, the monarch of Cathay, Japan, Mongolia, Tibet, Burma, India, Turkestan, Afghanistan, Persia, and the steeps of the Hindu Kush. Bow down, ye mortals, before his imperial majesty, Kublai Khan.
Rise, and welcome to our court, friend.
We bring greetings to your imperial majesty from the princes of Europe.
This pleases us. Was your journey a happy one, traveler?
We have survived it, O Emperor.
I have brought my son, your majesty. His name is Marco.
Greetings, almighty Khan.
You are welcome as your father and your uncle.
We were given to believe that conditions had changed in your court, but we might not be welcome.
Mrs. Polo, know ye not that false tidings will always seek your ears? Ye know me as a seeker after truth. Yet truth is a stranger in my own court, refused admission by the lies which surround me. Believe not the rumor. Believe only that Kublai Khan is happy to see you. But now, are we eager to hear your account of the long journey and of the far lands you have touched upon?
Your Majesty, Marco has kept a journal day by day.
I shall be delighted to tell you of our travels, mighty Khan.
Our ears are eager for your words, young merchant. Dismiss the court. We would be alone to hear firsthand the travels of Marco Polo.
And thus came we across the desert of Lop Nor to your majesty's capital at Kandalu, which some call Beiping. I became ill the last months of the journey, but I know that we were rescued from the wilderness by a captain of 10,000 in your army.
Tell us this captain's name, Marco. He shall be rewarded.
His name, sire, is Vang Chu.
Vang Chu? That man is dead.
Oh, impossible, your majesty. We were dwelling in his house only yesterday.
He plotted to overthrow our government. The evidence of his treason was incontrovertible. Vang Chu was beheaded at dawn.
Beheaded.
Do not be shocked at the severity of the sentence, Marco. Only be grateful that you are not in so high a place that you must sleep with a bared sword.
What of his sister, your majesty, Vang Chau? She was not punished, was she, for her brother's crime?
On the contrary, Marco, she is being married today to my prime minister.
Oh, what a strange mixture for her of pain and joy.
The philosophers tell us that life is the wedding of suffering and contentment. And it is the purpose of our rule, Marco, to give the people of our dominions the greatest share of contentment with the smallest tax of suffering.
Would that more of our rulers in Europe acted with such charity, sire.
Are not your rulers Christians, Marco? And does not the Christian religion teach charity in all things?
Aye, your majesty, but there is a mighty gap between the teaching of a religion and the living of it.
This we know. Our grandfather, Chinggis Khan, the great warrior, you have heard of him, Marco.
All Europe heard of him, sire, when he knocked at the gates of Vienna.
Chinggis was a worshipper of household idols. Our father was a Buddhist. Our prime minister is a Saracen. The chief of our palace guard, a Confucian. And in high places throughout our empire, our Hindus and Jews, followers of Lao Tzu and Zoroaster and Jesus Christ. We live and work together. We worship as we choose. It is a law of our empire that no temple, be it mosque or shrine or synagogue, may be taxed by our officials or molested by our citizens.
What is your religion, almighty emperor?
My religion, Marco? Call me a worshiper of God and a doer of good works.
Mighty Khan, let me serve you. Let my hands and brain be extensions of your own, sire.
We are pleased with you, Marco. Loyal deputies are as the rarest and most precious gems in the crown of an emperor.
What are those noises? The strange sounds. What are they, sire?
Come to the window, my boy. You hear the marriage procession of Akhmath, my minister.
What are those cracking sounds, like whips beating on rocks?
Have you no gunpowder in your western world, Marco? Those sounds come from firecrackers, as we call them, which delight our people at their feasts and ceremonies.
And that is Akhmath?
Wearing the three swords. It gives an old man satisfaction to see others enjoying themselves. Look at the happiness stamped on every face, Marco.
But there is no happiness on the face of the bride, Your Majesty. There is no joy in the heart of Vang Char.
Marco, pack your belongings.
We are leaving, Father?
We must.
We have enemies here.
Akmath, the Prime Minister.
He is a false man, my son. He has but to whisper in the Great Khan's ear, this man is plotting against you, that man is committing treason, and the Great Khan orders the accused person killed or imprisoned.
Everyone knows of his crimes, except Kublai Khan. But everyone is too much afraid of Akhmath's influence to expose him.
I am not afraid. The Khan is a great man. He deserves to hear the truth. And I dare to tell it to him.
Marco.
Oh, you should not have come here. If my husband found you in this garden, he would stop at nothing.
Vang-Char, why did you marry Akhmath?
He forced me. He said if I would marry him, he would save my brother's life. But Vang-Chu died. And I would to heaven that Vang-Char had died with him.
For your sake, and for the vengeance of your brother, I will denounce your husband before the Emperor.
Brave words, Venetian.
Akhmath.
I discover you plotting with my wife. That calls for steel, Mr. Marco.
And steel calls for steel, Sir Traitor. Guard yourself.
Marco, pray be careful. He is the best swordsman in all Cathay.
What a loyal wife I have, Venetian. She prays for you. How dare you speak of loyalty? You are a stranger to the word. I see you fight marching backwards, Venetian. For shame. For shame.
It is no shame to retreat, sir. Not when you retreat to the door of the Emperor's bedchamber.
A trick.
Yes, a trick, Akhmath. Vang-Char, go into the Great Khan's bedroom. Wake him.
Denounce me, Messer Marco. And I promise you, Vang-Char will die by torture before sunrise.
An empty threat, Akhmath. The justice of Kublai Khan will never let you fulfill it.
Why should we hold court at this hour of the night, Marco? Can it not wait until sunrise?
No, sire. A serpent has been lodged in your palace. Its poison must be stamped out now.
Very well. Guards, assemble the court. Whom do you accuse, Mr. Marco?
I accuse Akhmath, your prime minister, of high treason.
And I accuse the accuser of the same crime.
This is a capital offense. Does evidence support these accusations?
Much evidence, sire. But fear has kept it from you.
Then speak boldly, Marco, and have no fear.
This man, your first prime minister, has lied to you about false plots against the throne. Has been the cause of wrongful deaths to many of your loyal subjects, such as Vang Chu, the captain of 10,000.
He lies! He was a friend of Vang Chu, in league with him. Believe him not, O Emperor.
Silence, Akhmath. Speak on.
Because of his influence with you, sire, all men have feared this, Akhmath. And they have let him go unmolested about his crimes.
What crimes, Marco? Name them.
Murder, sire. The murder of Vang Chu and 100 other loyal subjects. Robbery, thieving. For he has withheld tax monies from your treasury to enrich his own fortune.
It is true, O Majesty. On our wedding night, this villain boasted of the tons of gold he has robbed from the treasury of the state.
Lies! A fabric of lies!
Search his house, sire. You will find a king's ransom in his storehouses.
My son speaks the truth, Great Khan.
Messrs. Matthew and Niccolo. What know ye of these things?
We have traveled among your people, sire, and talked with them. The only discontentment with your government is over the misrule of your minister, Akhmath.
We are grieved to hear these things, but we thank you, Venetians, for opening our eyes and having the courage to speak. Akhmath, if these accusations be proved true against you, hear thy sentence.
Not the act, sire. Pray, do not behead me.
Nothing so merciful. You will be confined to your golden storehouse without food or water until the life flies out of you.
No!
You will have time then to contemplate your crimes, Akhmath. And you will have your stolen riches to comfort you.
No!
Guard, remove him from our sight. No. the flower blooms, but in its fullest summer the fragrance of decay is already upon it. So it is with the governments men build. At the summer of our greatness, the men who would destroy us are smiling at our side. But also like the flower which withers, we clasp to the heart of us the seed of our rebirth. Of such is Marco Polo. As long as there are merchants like Marco, a tired old emperor, and a crumbling empire can look with hope to the dawning of the new day.
You've been listening to The Travels of Marco Polo, the eyewitness account by Messer Polo himself of one of history's most colorful adventures. Our thanks to Roland Morris, who played Marco, to Norman Field, who was heard as the mighty Kublai Khan, and to Claude Sweeten for his magnificent score. And our particular thanks to Ms. Eva Le Gallien, who selected The Travels of Marco Polo as this week's favorite story. Next week, a highly imaginative story about a merry-go-round in a little Paris park and how it influenced the man's life. If you've ever been to Paris or ever dream of going there, you'll catch the flavor and the magic that we all associate with the Queen of Cities. It's Maurice Lavelle's The Man from Yesterday, a rare story, the kind we like. It was chosen as the favorite story of the voice himself, Frank Sinatra. We hope you'll be listening.